Hello and welcome to Cinema Joes, where three average Joes discuss the significant topics in movie culture. I am your host, Alex Marcus, and when I am not talking to you about movies, I am the podcast editor for thepopreak.com. Unfortunately, my two co-hosts, Noah France and Justin Mancini, who also work together on Podwork Angels of Rush podcast, have fallen into a crack between universes and become lost in the multiverse. We may be hearing a transmission with one or more of their thoughts on the featured review today at some point during the episode, but until then, allow me to introduce my special guest for this week's episode, founder and editor-in-chief of Marvel Guides, Matt Farley. Welcome back to the pod, Matt.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me again. This is my second podcast appearance. My first was on your show, so glad I didn't mess it up so much that you didn't want me back.
No, absolutely not. It was great to have you on last time talking about Spider-Man No Way Home and The Matrix Resurrections. And those were two of my favorite movies of last year, so I'm excited to have you back on to talk about this one. And speaking of this one, if our missing host's multiversal shenanigans didn't clue you in yet, we will be talking about Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, a film first announced in the summer of 2019, which I have been hotly anticipating ever since, just by the name alone. But before we talk about that, I wanted to briefly get a temperature check from you with regards to how you're feeling overall with Phase 4, especially as you were about to walk into the movie theaters before seeing this movie.
Phase 4, I feel like, is still kind of in the Phase 1 of this saga, in terms of setting up a lot of standalone stories, a lot of origin stories, starting to put a few different threads together. And it's a little bit in, I feel like, multiple lanes this time, as opposed to kind of just building out the Avengers and the Infinity Stones. I feel like we have a lot of different lanes to pick from in terms of like the street level heroes, the cosmic stuff, the multiverse stuff. So I haven't seen anything in this phase that's like blown my mind, except maybe I would say WandaVision and Loki actually are probably my two highest rankings for this phase. And then this movie, spoiler alert, is probably right below them. But I haven't seen anything that I outright like hate or dislike. I think we're pretty much, the quality level is basically at least on par with kind of some of the mediocre Phase 1 or Phase 2 movies, and in a lot of cases better than those. So I think we're at a pretty good foundation that they're going to be building on. And this movie, I feel like, is the first one, whether you love it or hate it, I feel like it's starting to kick things up into the next gear, the next level of the storytelling in terms of what this next overall phase or saga is going to be about.
Yeah, I would mostly agree with what you're saying in terms of how I've been receiving the Phase 4 entries so far too. And for people who aren't as well aware of like the Marvel phases and what we're exactly talking about, we're talking about films like Black Widow, Shang-Chi, Eternals, No Way Home, and now this new film, Multiverse into Madness. And we're also talking about the TV shows like WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Hawkeye, Loki, What If, kind of. I don't like to count What If, but it does kind of count. that's our animated show. And then Moon Knight, of course, which just wrapped up. So I would mostly agree with what you're saying. I feel like people have a little bit of a strange revisionist history about how the phases have gone up until this point. I think that there was that 2017 into 2019 had such a crazy momentum to it where so many of the things felt like they were really bouncing off of each other. And if even the self-contained stories felt like they were really retroactively feeding into something, like for instance, Black Panther was a very self-contained story, but it was feeding from Civil War, and once you watch Infinity War, you're like, well, of course you have to see Black Panther to watch Infinity War, even though when you watch Black Panther, it feels very much like its own thing. And so I think that because we had all of that momentum, now there's this expectation of like, well, every single one of these movies is going to have to feel that way. But if you look back at Phase 1 and Phase 2, that is not really the case at all. They really had to build a lot of time into those movies before we hit the kind of phase three momentum of different franchises bouncing off of each other all of the time and reaching this kind of critical mass with Endgame. So I think that the whole point was to kind of like, okay, we hit Endgame. Now we're going to go scale it back down and slowly build it back up again. And we've gotten so much content in that amount of time that it feels like we should be moving in a more strong direction. But I don't think that the content is in that phase yet. It's still kind of like we're building the layer of the new cake.
Because of the TV shows and the number of movies a year, I mean, from 2008 to 2000, up until almost May of 2010, they had only released two movies in 2 years of phase one. And we're in that same amount of time of phase four, they've released five movies and six TV shows. So, I mean, just the number of hours of content in that time span is so much greater, but they're still in those first, you know, fundamental building blocks of the story. And the other thing people don't remember is in phase one, a lot of people didn't like or see those movies other than Iron Man and the Avengers. Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2 did well financially, but it was not a huge hit. And Captain America and Thor, I think in retrospect, people like those movies a lot more than they did at the time. And they certainly... they didn't bomb, but they weren't like these huge like things that everyone was going out and talking about and talking to their friends and family members about who'd never heard of this stuff before. They were still very much in those kind of early days of superhero movies where the hardcore fans would see them, maybe bring some family and friends with them. And they did basically just enough to warrant sequels, but they were nothing close to what we're seeing.
Yeah, and then when you look at Phase 2 was very bumpy as well. It had some really good standouts like Winter Soldier and Guardians, and it had some really kind of bumpy entries like Thor the Dark World and Avengers Age of Ultron. And so I feel like people really gloss over that when they talk about all of these movies, but it is because, you know, I think Marvel is kind of the victim of their own success in a way, because 2017 to 2019 was just an incredible stretch for them where almost every single one of those movies hit, at least in one way or another, right? Like Captain Marvel, a lot of people didn't like, but some people did like it, right? Ant-Man and the Wasp, some people didn't like it, some people really enjoyed it. So you have that sort of balance, whereas in the beginning, like there was really some movies where it was just like, I don't know, like this is coming out and I guess I'll see it because it's building to something, but I don't. But then when you look at what it was building to, like all of Phase 2 are disconnected movies that don't really build to anything at all. And they don't really build to Phase 3 in a meaningful way either. It was just kind
of like the finale of Phase 2 is Ant-Man, you know?
Yeah, and even if you look at the finale as being Avengers Age of Ultron and then the step down being Ant-Man, which is how Feige likes to talk about it, Age of Ultron doesn't really feel like anything that was being built to, and it really doesn't mean that much in terms of the plot moving forward either. Like, it introduces some important characters, but all the character dynamics that are active in Age of Ultron, we already had established previously, like the Cap and Tony tension and Thor not really fitting in with the rest of the group and things like that. And I feel like, you know, one of the podcasts that I do in addition to Cinema Joes, which many of our listeners might know, is Bill versus the MCU. And that's where we talk about 3 to 4 movies a month in chronological order. And we have just finished up Phase 2 and we're entering Phase 3. And that was a really stark reminder of basically like kind of checking expectations a little bit, because it's really easy to think like, oh, wow, like Thor Ragnarok and Spider-Man Homecoming and like all of those movies were so great for that 3-year period. But it was a really bumpy road to get there. And I would say that on average, the entries that we've gotten so far are roughly in line with what we've come to expect from in terms of quality, which is there's some good movies, there's some okay movies, and there's maybe one or two products that we really like a lot. And what I think is interesting about Phase 4, and I don't know if you've noticed this, it feels like everybody has different opinions on what the best things are, whereas in previous installments, for the most part, everybody was like, well, those are the ones that are the best, and these are the ones that aren't as good. But I feel like everyone's favorite Phase 4 so far has been really different and has been very specific to them. Would you say that you found that as well?
Yeah, I feel like especially with what I'm seeing with this one and Spider-Man and even Eternals to some degree, but for these last two especially, I've seen people saying this is the best Marvel movie, period. This is, you know, horrible to look at. I don't want any part of this. I've seen a huge range of opinions So yeah, I definitely agree. It's, people seem to be all over the place. I mean, I kind of like that, especially as like a longtime comic reader. If you look at the monthly list of comic books Marvel puts out, there's literally 50 to 60 series every month, and probably half of those are not good, and probably only a third to a fourth of them might even interest you that month, if that. So you're not, even though I run a website that's about kind of like cataloging and putting all these things into like reading orders, I wouldn't recommend most people try to do that and read everything, because it's not a necessarily a good experience, because sometimes you're just forcing yourself to read issues and series that you have no interest in, whether because it's not well written, or you don't like the art, or you don't like the character or the storyline. The MCU is getting to that point too, where there's just so much out there. Unfortunately, some people might argue they're trying to do too much, and that's, you know, affecting the quality overall. But I don't really see that as the case, because like we're talking about, when they were putting out one to two movies a year, they were putting out things on average that were as about the same or worse than what we're getting now. I mean, if you're looking at Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, they were only focusing on one or two at a time at that point, and they were not as good as what we're getting now. So it's hard for me to say, oh, they're doing too much and spreading themselves too thin, when they're putting things out at a quality level that's higher than what we've got in the past.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I also think that it's a good sign that people have different favorites. Like, on the one hand, if there's one thing that everyone can point to and say, this is excellent, then that does speak to its overall quality in a certain way. But it also, I think, is nice that Marvel isn't trying to be all things to all people all the time, right? I think that when you try to do that every single time out, you're going to end up failing way more. But if you start to try to hit different niches and hit different audiences slightly different ways with a floor in terms of overall quality, I think that that's honestly a better way to go forward if you're going to increase your output, right? Like, there's some people who loved Hawkeye. They thought it was so fun, so great. The dynamic between everybody was really fun. They liked the low stakes. And there were some people who hated Hawkeye, who thought that like the characters were annoying and nothing happened and it was boring and whatever. Some people loved Loki. Loki was a lot of people's favorite of the MCU shows so far. Other people were like, it was just a show where a bunch of people talked to each other and nothing happened. It was super boring. So like, I feel like they're giving us different shades and they're giving us different dynamics. And I think that that's a good way to cater to your audience if you're going to go from releasing two movies a year to releasing 12 entries into your saga a year, you know?
Yeah, because if you're just trying to replicate the thing that the most people like all the time, which obviously they want as many people to watch every single thing they put out as possible, but if they're truly just trying to replicate the formula, which I think a lot of people incorrectly argue that they do, you're going to just start, everything's going to start feeling the same. And I know there are cases and arguments to be made where a lot of this stuff does kind of follow the same formula, similar set pieces, and, you know, the way the plot unfolds. But I really, compared to a lot of major franchises, you could stack two of these movies together and someone who's not, you know, really well versed in this universe would not guess that they were part of the same franchise.
Yeah, I agree. So now that we've kind of talked big picture phase four, it's time to kind of talk about the big kind of crown jewel of at least 2022 when it comes to phase four. And that is our featured review for this week, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which is directed by Sam Raimi, written by Michael Waldron, and starring Benedict Cumberbatch, Elizabeth Olsen, Benedict Wong, Rachel McAdams, and Xochitl Gomez. But before we do that, allow me to open up a star-shaped portal to another corner of the multiverse, because I hear a familiar voice calling to us.
Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, or the return of Sam Raimi to the superhero genre. As always, I think in pretty much every case, the MCU, the casting is always spot on. I think everyone is well cast for the characters and does a really good job. So there's no casting choice, there are no cameos that I found bad. A lot of the cameos are pretty fun. There are a lot of great visual moments, maybe not as much as I would have hoped. It's always good to have a nice Danny Elfman score in the back of the movie. And on top of that, there are two real standout action sequences in the movie. One is a fight sequence that involves using musical notes that also affect the score when they're used between Doctor Strange and his opponent. That is definitely one of the single best and most interesting action sequences we've ever gotten in one of these movies. And given that action scenes becoming kind of samey or over CGI'd is always, you know, a dangerous trap that these kinds of movies can fall in. This movie mostly does manage to avoid it. Like, the action is well paced, it's mostly well edited. And like I said, there are these two really standout sequences. Other than that, though, this movie just did not, especially since I'm seeing this after having seen Everything Everywhere All at Once, this movie can't help but suffer by comparison. So Doctor Strange is pulled into a multiversal conflict, often between alternate versions of the Avengers or alternate versions of himself, to save a new character called America, who has her own strange powers that involve being able to jump through the multiverse. She's a great character. The actress they got for her is really good, and I'm really excited to see where else she goes. And it's a great concept. So on the one hand, there ultimately is little in terms of, I mean, obviously the plot to a certain extent extends around the dangers of, you know, mixing timelines and universes. That's to be expected. But it just, it doesn't go quite as deep as Everything Everywhere All at Once did. And on top of that, I really have a problem with the fact that the real villain here is the, in air quotes, the original MCU's universe's Scarlet Witch. Elizabeth Olsen is back post-WandaVision, but we've completely regressed her character. And everything that she supposedly learned by the end of WandaVision, and WandaVision, it was, in my opinion, really well executed and very compelling, is just rolled back, and she's just a straight-up villain and is willing to just slaughter and maim and destroy to get something that she clearly can't have, and it's clearly not going to end well for her. Olsen herself does a great performance. There are moments, like the way they resolve this arc of her as the villain is very creative and compelling, but it felt like we'd already been there with WandaVision and we'd already covered this. So why are we going back to this well? That's a big issue I have, and that's probably the single biggest thing holding this movie back from being really great in my eyes. Like, I just didn't buy the regression of the character to that extent, and the really rushed way that they try to resolve that within the time frame of the movie. It just doesn't gel. And all the individual moments, you know, some of the creative, you know, other universes that they very briefly go through, the highlight action scenes, none of them can, at the end of the day, none of them can really gel the way that they should in order to make this a great and compelling movie. At the end, I would say this movie is fine, but it doesn't really rise to the level of greatness. There are a lot of parts of this film that I like and that I found fun to watch, and I did enjoy seeing it. It was a fun watch. You know, it goes into the, for me, this goes into the mid bin of where, you know, where the majority of Marvel movies lie. Not bad, not at all. Although if you're the type of person who just can't stand like the uber meta world building, this isn't going to be for you. But it's no Guardians 2. It's no Thor Ragnarok. It's certainly no Black Panther.
Hello, listeners. Justin Mancini, one of your co-hosts on Cinema Joes here. So sorry I couldn't make the recording of this episode. It didn't quite work out for me this time, but I did want to share my thoughts on the movie with you because I did get a chance to see it. And boy, howdy, did I have a fun time with this movie. I really enjoyed it. It's a little unwieldy at points. I think it's maybe at its best when it's more streamlined and really focusing on the core characters, because that's where I think the film really succeeded for me. I like what it does with the Doctor Strange character. It really, I think, takes him to task for being this sort of all-powerful authority figure and really exposes the part of his life where he feels powerless. And yet it doesn't necessarily redeem him, but it does sort of force him to come to terms with it in a way that I found very satisfying. And I think even more satisfying, honestly, was what the film does with Wanda Maximoff, who is our villain. That really surprised me. I knew that she was going to be a pivotal part in the movie, didn't realize that she was going to be playing our principal antagonist in the film. And I think it still works to me, even taking into account the events of WandaVision, because I think the whole conceit of the movie, with these alternate versions of ourselves, I think allows a certain level of latitude with our interpretations of the characters, because it's more like we're seeing different parts of them, different versions of themselves, as opposed to just one character. We're seeing all the different facets of them. And I really liked the last sort of interaction between Wanda in our universe, and this alternate Wanda that has the children that our Wanda so desperately seeks. And considering the losses, considering just how much of Wanda's life has been defined by loss, and not just by loss, but losing the people who have helped her cope with preceding losses, to see the final person giving her comfort, this version of herself, I found incredibly moving and very satisfying. Very satisfying arc conclusion for that character. I'm not fully convinced that we have no more Wanda Maximoff, just knowing the possibilities of the multiverse that still await us, but I still found what this film does to work very effectively. I think it is maybe a little beholden to its whole multiverse idea. I wish it maybe stuck to being a little more streamlined than it is, but at the same time, it's incredibly fun. The big question for me going into this was, okay, Sam Raimi is the director here. Is he going to bring us the trademark Sam Raimi insanity that I'm used to seeing from him? And I think he absolutely does, especially in the last act of this movie, when Stephen Strange makes it known that he will not be inhabiting a living version of himself. I think I cheered a little, at least inside, but I did cheer internally. I loved the whole realization of that kind of mad insanity, the gleeful insanity, really. I think that's Raimi at his best, you know, whether he's doing The Evil Dead or the Spider-Man movies, you always like to see that if you're going to see a Raimi movie, and I think this film gave us that. So yes, overall, really enjoyed this movie. I can't wait to hear what you, Alex, and Matt think about it. I look forward to listening to the episode.
Okay, thanks, Justin and Noah, for contributing your thoughts on this unexpectedly divisive, at least in my opinion, film. But Matt, what did you think? Did this meet your expectations?
It did meet my expectations. I've got a couple issues with the movie, but I'm happy with how it played out and where everything ended up. We'll get into it. I think the two main lanes of critique I'm seeing with this movie is it didn't meet expectations in terms of like crazy cameos and crazy multiverse effects and destinations and things like that. And the big critique is that it didn't handle Wanda's character well or was in line with where people thought they were going with her.
Yeah, and we're going to get into all of that. I'm curious what your expectations were headed into it, though, and whether it met your personal expectations.
Yeah, it did meet my personal expectations. I was not viewing this as Avengers Endgame. I was viewing this as the first kind of, at least cinematically, the first stepping stone into this multiverse saga. I didn't really enjoy, I wouldn't say I didn't enjoy, but I thought the first Doctor Strange movie was just okay. It's definitely in my lower bottom third of the MCU, especially for origin movies. It was fine, but it's not one that I really rewatched. I've probably seen it maybe the least of any of them other than like Hulk and Thor 2. But I tend to enjoy Doctor Strange more as a supporting character, which he kind of in a way was in this, not counting all the different versions of him. But I like the path and the story they gave him through this, kind of ushering in America Chavez and his kind of discovery of different facets of himself by seeing how other people in other universes have either interacted with him, have reacted to things he's done, and then even coming face to face with versions of himself and kind of seeing maybe some of the error of his ways or his instincts as a reflection in other versions of himself. In terms of it being a Sam Raimi movie, that was the one thing everyone, all the reviews said going in, like, wow, this is way more of a Sam Raimi movie than I expected. And I definitely agree with that. That didn't necessarily come across for me in the trailers. I didn't think it would feel like not a Sam Raimi movie, but I didn't expect them to go as far and as hard as they did in certain areas, which I was pleasantly surprised with, because I think this is one that, especially for maybe some people who don't enjoy it, it might age better. It might be one people come back to a little bit more, especially where we see how they take some of these characters in future movies. This one might be a little easier to swallow if you're not happy with what they did here. I could find myself coming back. Like, I wish I could rewatch this right now, just because visually and just some of the twists and turns it takes, it just does things that you've never seen in a Marvel movie before. And that was refreshing to see. And especially because, you know, a common complaint is these movies are like roller coaster rides or amusement park rides. Strangely, this one felt the most like that to me than anyone that's come before it. Yet at the same time, it was one of the most, you know, unique and original. And I loved kind of being on that ride from literally the first second it starts. You really do feel like you're like on some sort of interactive ride, and it really never lets up. So even though I have issues with some parts of it, you're moving so quickly that I could barely even like sit and think with about the things I didn't like, because there was always something new that I was enjoying put in front of me.
Yeah, I fully agree with that last part that you said about how it just like the pace is so relentless in a really fun, exciting way. For me, my expectations were, it seems lower than a lot of other people's in terms of what they were looking for from this film. But I was very excited for this film to come out. I've been looking forward to it, as I said, since they went on stage at Comic-Con right after Endgame, and they were like, we're coming out with a Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. It's going to co-star Elizabeth Olsen. I was so excited after WandaVision, which is a show that I really, really loved, knowing that this was going to kind of tie directly into that also made me even more excited. But I was excited to spend more time with the characters and to get like a real interesting sense of where the multiverse is headed in a way, you know, and just to have fun with it, right? I didn't have these giant expectations of it being the next Endgame. That seemed like an unrealistic expectation. For me, it felt more like, you know, Phase 3 kicked off with Captain America Civil War, where that is an episode of this, you know, franchise where the characters that you're getting to play around with is scaled up from what you're used to. The kind of ideas of in-universe stuff is scaled up, but it is also centrally about the main protagonist of Captain America tied, getting pulled between two really core relationships, Tony Stark on one hand and Bucky Barnes on the other, right? And so it's a good way to kind of set the tone for what's to come in Phase 3, which is all about kind of different corners of the Marvel Universe interacting with each other, creating that stronger cohesiveness that will then be paid off with Endgame. But it's ultimately in Captain America's story about his emotional relationships. And I think that if you're looking at Doctor Strange as a nice way to kind of set up Phase 4, you're looking at it functioning in a very similar way, where it is about these two characters, Strange and Wanda, in a lot of ways. You're getting to know them in a different context from what you're used to. You're seeing storytelling kind of level up in terms of playing around with different storytelling aspects that we haven't seen before with the multiverse, and the different sort of iterations of characters and things like that have been teased in Loki, but teased with No Way Home. But those are two specific situations. This feels like it's much more of like, and this is where things are headed, right? And then it's ultimately ground into this relationship dynamic with Doctor Strange and these two characters that are one long-term important to him, two kind of becoming more important to him as the story goes on, and services him way better than I was expecting them to, and also in a way more visually dazzling way than I was expecting to, right? Like, Doctor Strange 1 was basically kind of like Marvel trying to crib off of Christopher Nolan's Inception when it comes to the visuals and stuff like that. This is just giving us a whole, like you said, a whole different thing than we have seen before, and it really kind of made it very enjoyable. So for me, I was really surprised by how far they were willing to go. I was surprised by the way that they didn't kind of take some cop-outs where I expected them to later in the film. And I had a really good time with what they did, and there was a lot of surprises along the way, and that's really all I could ask for. You know, my expectations being subverted is the thing that I most want to see in a story, and I think this gives it to me in a lot of ways. So yeah, I am sad to hear that a lot of people don't feel the way that we do, but
yeah, and like I think I'm even a little bit lower than you are on it, but I still really, really enjoyed it. And I think Captain America Civil War, for people listening, if you haven't seen it yet, that's a really good comparison of kind of where to set your expectations at, because it really is much like Captain America Civil War was primarily about Captain America, but also a lot about Iron Man and their relationship with each other, with a whole bunch of kind of wider MCU stuff peppered in throughout. That's very much what this is with Strange and Wanda. And then some things kind of mostly in the middle, setting the stage for a much larger story.
Yeah. And so now a lot of people like to call Captain America Civil War Avengers 2.5, right? Because they feel like, well, it's the scale of an Avengers movie, even though it has that sort of narrower emotional focus at the end that we're both talking about. And because of that narrower focus, I feel like it's, whether it's a good sequel to Avengers or not, we could talk about it, but I think that it's undoubtedly a good sequel to Captain America the Winter Soldier, first and foremost. Do you think that Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is a good sequel to the original Doctor Strange movie?
I think it is. The issue is that what came before in Captain America was much stronger than what came before in Doctor Strange, specifically in Winter Soldier. That's one of my favorite MCU movies. And Civil War really carried on that story of, you know, his search for Bucky and things like that, and his kind of disillusionment with S.H.I.E.L.D. and some of the other things set up in that movie. I think this carries on several things set up in the first Doctor Strange movie, such as his relationship with Christine. It deals with the Mordo situation a little bit differently. It doesn't necessarily pick up on where that post-credit scene from the first Doctor Strange leaves off. There's a little bit of dialogue that kind of like either sums that up or closes off that loop of where that story went. But Mordo obviously is in it. And the issue is, you know, I don't really enjoy too much of that movie. And there wasn't a ton set up in it that I was like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to see where this goes in the sequel. Because like I said, I really enjoy Doctor Strange as a supporting character. I always have in the comic books, like when Spider-Man or someone needs sort of a magical otherworldly solution to a problem that they're not used to dealing with. I always love when they pop into his house and there's all sorts of weird stuff. He's always like in the middle of some weird thing where he's like half his body is another universe. He's like, I'll get to you in 1 second. I'm dealing with this like serpent beast over here. So it was never a character who I was like, I need a whole franchise around him. I'm glad we have it, but yeah, I think it's a fine sequel to the first Doctor Strange. I just think there's so much that has come in between those movies, more so than what came in between Winter Soldier and Civil War, in terms of all like the Endgame stuff it has to tie in, all the, not tie in, but just all that stuff that's happened since then, WandaVision, setting up future stories for this phase. So I think it's a little bit more disconnected from the first Doctor Strange compared to the relationship between Winter Soldier and Civil War. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would mostly agree with you. And I would say not only is it more, like, not only have we seen more things happen, like, in terms of the MCU releases between Doctor Strange and Doctor Strange 2 versus Captain America Winter Soldier and Captain America Civil War, but also, like, those Captain America films were only separated by 2 years, whereas the Doctor Strange films were separated by 6, right? So that's a huge amount of time. And if we think about, like, in-universe, the Doctor Strange movie is weirdly not tied down to a very specific time in the timeline. It's a little bit nebulous. It's clear that a lot of time is passing, maybe even years over the course of that film. And then it seems to settle like shortly before, like definitely before Infinity War. Like by the time that in that post-credit scene when he's with Thor, he seems to have had a lot of time in his magical element since we had seen him last. So his cameo in Thor Ragnarok seems to happen a significant amount of time after the events of Doctor Strange. So it's hard to say exactly how much time, but I feel like we could safely say that at least like the Doctor Strange ends at the latest 2015, right? And we are now, in terms of the world inside of the MCU, when Doctor Strange 2 starts, at least 2023, in terms
just
of what's going on.
You know, just so people don't get mad at you, he does have an award, because I just rewatched it, in the first movie that has, like, I don't know, Best Doctor, whatever the award is. It says 2016 on it. So I don't know. I guess the movie's supposed to maybe take place at maybe the beginning of 2016 and end towards the end of 2016, and then Thor Ragnarok is like, I think Thor Ragnarok is supposed to be 2018 because it literally ends like right before Infinity War, which is 2018.
Sure.
So if Doctor Strange is somewhere around 2016, that still gives you kind of like a year and a half to 2 years.
Okay. Well, and you are the expert in terms of Marvel timelines, so I should have just asked you instead of trying to speculate. But yeah, so, you know, we could say safely that 7 years minimum has passed since the events of Doctor Strange, right? Because we are in at least 2023 now in the world. Do you have any insight into where this takes place specifically?
So WandaVision takes place a few weeks after Endgame, which is like the fall, because there's like Halloween stuff going on. So it's like October, November 2023, I believe. Then Spider-Man Far From Home is 8 months later, and No Way Home is even a few months after that because it goes into like fall and Christmas. So I think this is about it. So Spider-Man No Way Home is a year, roughly a year after WandaVision, and this is even further than Spider-Man. So this is at least a year since the end of WandaVision.
Okay.
And
so
maybe a year, maybe it could be a year and a half, could be closer to 2 years, but at least a year, which I think is key for some of the discussion later on.
Yeah, so we're probably like in around 2024 then in that case.
Yeah.
Which compared to 2016, that's eight years talking. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things have happened to Doctor Strange's character that we just haven't seen, right? Obviously he was gone for 5 years, but there's a lot of things that happened in between. And it seems like they're suggesting that his kind of battle with Chiwetel Ejiofor happened off screen in between. How do you feel about that choice? Obviously we pick up with an alternate version of him in a different timeline and they have fun with that. But how do you feel about the fact that the movie ends on this kind of big, it seems like a lot of that movie is setting him up as this future antagonist who seems to have been dispatched off screen.
Yeah, he says something about like, oh, he went insane and keeps trying to kill me or something like that. So I don't know if like that's done with or if he's still kind of out there like hunting for him. But it doesn't seem like it's a guy he's actively worried about right now. I thought it was a slight missed opportunity. I thought you could have done like a cool opening scene where he's like battling him or something, and you could have killed him off then, you know, something could have happened where he dies or Strange, like, you know, imprisons him or accidentally kills him or something. And then that could have been a cool reveal in terms of the multiverse where like, here's this guy you just dispatched of, but a different version of him. But it's fine. It annoys me a little bit when they set up like big things in post-credit scenes and never follow through with them. They don't usually do that. A big one is Spider-Man Homecoming, but that's a little bit out of their hands. Sure, and, you know,
yes,
this land now. But they don't do that too often, and I'm sure it was the intention to follow up on when they wrote that. But it doesn't bother me too much because at least they brought him back for this movie. Just in a different capacity.
Yeah, and arguably, and we can get into this, but I think probably in a much more interesting character overall in this version of him, because there is a level of I recently rewatched Doctor Strange, and I think that Chiwetel Ejiofor is doing a really good job in that role, and it plays a really specific role in that screenplay if he is the devout believer of the rules, right? Whereas Wong is kind of like there as this person who is a follower of the Ancient One, but has his own kind of autonomy. He's not, a theocrat, if you will, you know. Mm-hmm. He's not like so beholden to dogma. And so that is an interesting person for Steven to play off of as he's trying to formulate his own magical identity, right? But in this version, we have a lot of kind of unexpectedness to him, right? We don't know how much of Ejiofor's Mordo is in this version of Mordo, right? We don't know to what extent those attributes are immovable, eternal throughout all of the universe, and to what extent it was specific to the very person that we met that one time. And I think the movie has a lot of fun with that. How do you feel like that worked as an element of the storytelling? And do you think that it was, would you have rather see the character that we knew in this movie somewhere instead?
I'm glad we got the version we got. I think since they had him, I thought it wouldn't hurt to include the original version in some sense too, but I don't think we needed two versions of him running around throughout the whole movie. And in general, I really like what you just said in terms of that's a huge, you know, benefit or appeal to multiversal storytelling, to me at least, is getting to meet different versions of characters and having your expectations challenged in terms of, you know, here's everything you thought you knew about this character. You might trust them, you might dislike them, and then have that flipped because they're really nothing like the person that you thought you knew. So I liked him as an example of that sort of story.
Now, a character who we did get to see two versions of throughout the film is Rachel McAdams' character of Christine Palmer. So how do you think that worked overall, where we get a kind of a brief kind of interlude where she gets married and she has a confrontation with Strange about their past and about where they are as peers and as former loves in the present. And then we spend the vast majority of McAdams' runtime with a different version of her altogether.
Yeah, I thought the scene at the wedding was okay. I feel like the conversation he was trying to have with her, was not the appropriate place for that. It seemed like they had basically not talked since, the last Doctor Strange movie, and he was just trying to kind of bare his soul to her and apologize for a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, you don't think that, an old flame popping up after not talking to you for 8 years at your wedding and expressing his profound and undying love was appropriate?
I mean, I guess he was invited because, you know, he's famous and he saved the world. But, so, I like both of them in terms of their acting, but I never really felt any real strong chemistry between them compared to what I felt between, you know, Tony Stark and Pepper Potts and some of the other relationships we've seen in the MCU. So I kind of enjoyed the new version we got where that romantic connection was not really at the forefront of what they're trying to do with her. And she was more of sort of she didn't really care about him. At least at first, she didn't really care about him at all. And she was sort of doing her own thing in terms of working at the institution she was working at. And she got to, I thought, do a lot more in terms of actually being involved in some of the action scenes. So I like the new version of her we got because I think they kind of just couldn't really think of anything to do with the Greek iteration.
Yeah, well, and I also like the fact that they let the version that we saw previously move on with her life. You know, she was a person who, when we meet her, is kind of fed up with Strange's bullshit in the first place, and she's trying to be friends with him, and then he goes out of his way to try to ruin that, and then she's very willing to let that go, right? So it would be a little bit hard to believe that character would have then, you know, been opining for him for all of these years or still be stuck in his orbit in a dysfunctional way, because she seemed like a very functional person. You know, I think that's one of the things that Rachel McAdams plays really well in that first movie. Just like, I'm trying to be nice to you, but if you're not going to treat me well, I'm going to walk out and I'm not going to come back. And then she doesn't. And you really believe that.
And the beginning of that movie, he is the worst. It's at least with Tony Stark, he's kind of charming and funny, but I don't find really anything redeeming about Stephen Strange in the first half of that original movie. So that's where most of their scenes are together. So you mostly just see him being a jerk to her and you're like, yeah, don't waste your time with this guy.
Absolutely. And I like that here with the alternate version that we get, she also has put her version of Strange in the past as well, but she is intrigued by just how different this new version of him could be. And there's more of a intellectual curiosity than an emotional connection or romantic spark between them, I think. But I think that was a good way of kind of writing around the fact that these two actors just don't have a lot of chemistry together. You know, I'm a big fan of both of theirs separately, and I've seen them have fantastic chemistry with other people, but I just don't think that they really seem believable as exes who long ago stopped wanting to be in a relationship with each other. Yeah. And that's about it. So I'm glad that they found a new way to kind of build that into this dynamic again.
And Doctor Strange in general, even in the comics, he's never someone I think of who is someone who wants to settle down or even date anyone. He really does seem like that sort of solitary, isolated character. And I appreciate that they're trying to, you know, build some sort of relationship for him. But I never really think of him that way. I'm not really interested in seeing him find love or anything like that. It just seems like it's not really, it doesn't necessarily need to be in the cards.
Yeah, although, you know, and we'll get to it, the end credits scene kind of suggests maybe there will be a future romance in his life in the coming movies. But just closing out this kind of section on the extension of the Strange 1 brand into Strange 2, because so much of Doctor Strange 2 is different from Strange 1, how do you think this movie serviced Wong, who I think does a really nice job not only in the first Doctor Strange as kind of carving out his own role in this universe, but also in the ensuing films? He is basically the only cast member of that Doctor Strange movie, other than Tilda Swinton, who also pops up in Endgame, who gets to show up in multiple iterations outside of Strange himself. So how do you think that this movie services him and what was being set up in that first movie for him?
I think that I was missing him a little bit in this movie. There's feel like there are large stretches where he's absent and he gets just separated from Strange. And I really like their dynamic. I like kind of like how he always is sort of giving Strange a hard time, and kind of trying to teach him something and like kind of put him in his place a little bit when he's getting a little arrogant. And I don't really think this movie had that too much. I like that Wong is still the Sorcerer Supreme. Which was something I didn't think of when first watching. I think they introduced that in No Way Home, but, you know, Strange mm-hmm. was gone for 5 years, so there needed to be someone in his place. And I like that they didn't reverse that, and they didn't even reverse it by the end of this movie, which I was surprised about. I thought that they would kind of revert the status quo there. But yeah, I enjoyed all of his scenes, but he felt a little absent to me on my first watch. Maybe I'll feel different.
Yeah, what they chose to do is, because basically Wanda, and trust me, we're going to get into Wanda, but I wanted to settle these old characters first. Wanda has to spend a lot of the movie on her own, and they chose to move Wong into her orbit to give her someone to talk to and to give a voice of reason in some of those scenes. And I think that if you need to have someone function in that way, I think that Benedict Wong does a great job. But it is sad that he doesn't get to have more interplay with Cumberbatch, because I do think that they, unlike Rachel McAdams, they do have really good friend chemistry. And it is something that we miss. But I also think that it helps for the film that Strange is kind of on his own with a new character, America Chavez. I think that if it was Strange and Wong and America running through the multiverse, it might feel a little bit overcrowded with all the other things going on. So I get that, yeah. the choice from a screenwriting perspective to do that.
And I think in the MCU, they're really trying to avoid the trope of the comics that Wong is basically just his assistant, and he, you know, answers the door for him, and he takes care of stuff around the house for him. Especially with Wong being Sorcerer Supreme, I like the idea that, you know, Wong doesn't need to be tied to Strange, and they don't need to do everything together. Wong can go off and do his own things, like we saw in Shang-Chi, which is really cool. So mm-hmm. from that perspective, I appreciate that they're not trying to make it seem like he's just Strange's buddy or assistant or something. He's his own, you know, right now he's a higher status in that scene than Strange does, and he, you know, he's off doing his own.
Yeah, in the first one, he has way more knowledge than Strange does, even though Strange has this sort of heroic arc, right? So he's more of a mentor than a sidekick, which is how he often, I think, is shown in other medium. And here, he gets, because he is Sorcerer Supreme, I think it's really smart that they allow him to be Sorcerer Supreme, because it gives him a role outside of Strange that is functional within the universe, which I think works really well. So that way you can kind of maintain that high status, low status thing where, like, Strange is our protagonist, but Wong is a Sorcerer Supreme, so he has more status in a lot of contexts than Strange does. And it feels, I think that is a good balance. I hope they maintain that moving forward. I, too, was a little bit surprised, though. I thought that they would probably find a way to kind of reverse it at some point, because you just think Doctor Strange is the Sorcerer Supreme, right? That's, like, his whole thing. But I know in the comics, many people have been the Sorcerer Supreme over the years. So has Wong ever been?
Not to my knowledge. And if he has recently, it's probably because they just wanted to make, like, the movies, which they are.
Sure, which I know that they are want to do. But
yeah.
Moving on, we briefly mentioned her just a minute ago, and America Chavez, who, as I said, is played by Xochitl Gomez, who I think is tremendous in the role. This is a really big platform for her as a new character, right? She's a major character in the comic books when it comes to, like, the Young Avengers, especially, and given her multiversal power set, definitely makes sense for her to be debuting at this point in the MCU. But I'm curious what you think about this film as a launching pad for her, because, you know, the movie starts with her, it ends with her, and yet we don't get a ton of character development in the same way that we do some of the other characters. So I'm curious what you think about that.
Yeah, I've seen some valid critiques that she's sort of like the MacGuffin of this movie. She's sometimes treated a little bit more like a prop and just someone who you're kind of trying to like keep the ball away from certain people or get to certain places. But I think, you know, especially considering like how new she is to it's seemingly she's only been in a couple movies, I think. I thought the acting was great. I thought, you know, she was really like dynamic on screen. I thought she had good chemistry with Benedict Cumberbatch. And it left me wanting to see more of her. And she was in a surprising amount of the movie. So there's a decent chunk where she's in almost every scene. But yeah, you only get a little bit of hints about her backstory, and you know, she doesn't have too much characterization. So it definitely left you wanting to see a little bit more of her and, you know, spend more time just discovering what her journey through the MCU is going to be. But considering that it was a Doctor Strange movie, I thought they found a decent amount of time to give her. What did you think?
Yeah, I feel similar. The thing that I left the movie thinking about in regards to her character most is how disappointed I am retrospectively that she ended up not being able to be in Spider-Man No Way Home like was originally intended. Because originally, if people don't know, Multiverse of Madness was supposed to come out first, and then No Way Home was supposed to come out. And in that version of things, America was going to be kind of part of Team Spidey, at least for a time, and she was going to be the one that's going to help bring in the other Peters and kind of help with some of the portal shenanigans that Ned ends up getting up to. And I would have loved to see her with that group of young actors. I think that they would have had great she would have had great chemistry with them, and it would have been a fun element to that film that we ultimately didn't get just for silly continuity, scheduling, corporate production company reasons, which stinks because like that never should be what governs the storytelling choices, even with something like this. So that is my big missed opportunity that I hope they rectify in the future. You know, if not with Spider-Man characters, most likely that won't be the case, but with other characters that we enjoy that she could have a fun dynamic with. Like, you imagine Kate Bishop's character, for instance, would probably have a fun dynamic with her. And you know, we've met a couple of other potential young Avengers over the last few installments that she might be bouncing off against too. Is there anyone in that respect that you're looking forward to seeing her maybe being paired with moving forward?
Yeah, we'll have to see. Casey Lang could be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing, I'm forgetting the actress name off the top of my head, but the new actress who's going to be playing her, and then the next Ant-Man. I think there's still a chance we could see her with Spider-Man. I don't think Spider-Man's going to be a huge part of the Young Avengers because obviously of all the Sony stuff, his appearances are going to be limited. But if they do have the opportunity to put him in a couple crossover movies, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that he's in a Young Avengers or even, you know, whatever the next huge crossover movie is. So I'm hopeful they'll still find a chance to maybe see that interact with someone. Because yeah, I think her and Tom Holland. Together.
Yeah, especially now that they've both been the wards of Doctor Strange once upon a time.
Yeah.
And yeah, we do, you know, speaking of corporate contracts and things like that, when Marvel and Sony signed that new Spider-Man deal, it was for one more Spider-Man movie and one more team-up movie. And as of right now, we still don't know when that team-up movie is going to be coming. So it is interesting to consider where he might be popping up later. But I'm really looking forward to seeing what she does next, because I just think she is so winning and charming and has such great personality in this role. Like, she does have to tell you who she is through action very often in the film. She gets that one kind of flashback moment where you see her origin, which I think is a bit hokey in some ways. It's like, it's hard to believe that those are real people in that memory. I know it's like the memory of a child, so maybe you could kind of say, well, it's like idealized in some way, but it feels a bit, you know, I don't know. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, just the whole device in general, like, oh, look, there's a thing on the street that will show us a flashback of your life, like a little bit, you know, convenient. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would have preferred to see like an actual scene maybe at the beginning of the movie or something of her on her home world. That would have been preferable to me, but I'm hopeful we'll get it eventually. You know, if
yeah,
the, if
and
the
I mean,
next
I love that they gave her her canonical gay moms. That was honestly a bit of a surprise, given the way that Disney and Marvel have been dealing with representation, where they make a lot of allusions to it going to be happening and then oftentimes ends up getting cut before the movie gets released. So I was happy to actually see that that actually happened. But, you know, they don't touch on her queer identity at all in the film, which is understandable given the context, because of course she is running for her life the entire film. So right. I get it that not coming up. And she certainly doesn't seem like someone who has had the opportunity to put down roots and actually have relationships with people yet, outside of versions of Doctor Strange, which is, you know, not really a great way to meet people as far as it seems. So I understand it not coming up, but I hope it does in the future, because that's a huge part of her character in the comics, and you know, that's a big deal.
Yeah, definitely.
But moving on from America, I want to touch briefly on the sort of expectation game that we were talking about a little bit earlier when it comes to multiversal shenanigans. A lot of people felt disappointed with how little multiverse stuff was in a movie with multiverse in the title. And I'm curious if you feel similar.
Not disappointed necessarily. I guess surprised, because watching the trailers, you see that big scene of them kind of like floating through three or four different realities. Really, if you've seen the trailer, you've basically seen every reality they go into. So I guess in that sense, I was thinking they were holding something back, and there's probably like two or three more worlds where they spend at least, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. And, you know, if this was like a 2-hour and 40-minute movie, I would have expected kind of a sequence where maybe they have some fun and spend like 2 or 3 minutes in like 5 or 6 different worlds each, rather than just sort of that montage. But at the same time, I like that it was sort of really focused on 2 or 3 different realities, because it gave things a little more weight and you could get to know some of the variants a little bit more, rather than just having yourself like whisked in and out of places where, you know, if you're spending most of the movie just jumping from place to place and meeting new versions of characters for 30 seconds to a couple minutes at a time, you're going to stop really caring about anything that happens, because you know it's just going to be like ripped out from under you any second. So I like that they were able to actually spend, you know, 20 minutes in one reality, 20 minutes in another reality, and then also, you know, bring it back home at the end. So there could have been a little bit more inventiveness. The reality where they spent the middle portion of the movie visually wasn't like super exciting or like weirdly different than our own reality. But I think there's a few reasons why they wanted to make it kind of recognizable to the main MCU, to say, you know, for all the things that happened there and all the things that were foreshadowed, it's kind of saying, you know, this is not some crazy, like, weird reality where you're all paint, which is one of the ones they show. This is something that, like, this is something where this could happen to you. You know, if you're not careful, this could come home to your MCU reality. I think it was a good way of showing sort of some of the consequences of the multiverse by giving you more of a grounded alternate universe.
Yeah, I think that that's a really smart point, the idea that if you made too many of the realities feel too different and too abstract, that you might run the risk of not letting that point of there but before the grace of multiversal gods go I, right? Which is definitely a theme of this story in a lot of ways, especially with the Doctor Strange character arc, which is obviously central to what this movie is doing. So I think that that's a very good point. I also sort of feel like they could have done a little bit more. Like, I think that this movie coming out so soon after Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is a film that I absolutely loved, which I think is excellent. I think it's one of the best films of the last 5 years, not just the best multiversal movie to come out in the last month. So I obviously have very high opinions of what the Daniels are able to do with the multiverse concept there. And I think that what is so remarkable about that film is that they're able to tell really compelling stories from about 5 or 6 different realities, many of them wildly different from ours, and still find the time to have those emotional cores and have it work. this is a very different movie, and so I feel like judging it based on that is not entirely fair. Certainly in my end of year rankings, I will be judging them against each other, you know, in terms of overall quality. But in terms of use of the multiverse, like you said, this movie just has different interests in mind. I would say that areas where you could have had a little bit more fun with it could have been, like, especially towards the end when America is honing her powers for the first time and she's punching Wanda. You could have seen a situation where maybe she is opening up portals to places as she's punching that are a little bit more interesting than just, I guess, like, the place where Darth Vader almost died in Star Wars. It's just like,
I thought the same thing. I turned to my brother, like, are we going to see, like, Obi-Wan fighting in the background on a little robot?
Just very faintly, you just hear, you were the chosen one. But yeah, I would have liked something a little bit more inventive in a place like that, for instance. But overall, I think that, you know, when I think multiverse, I think we're going to get different versions of the characters that we know. And we're going to use that as a storytelling technique to explore aspects of those characters. And I think in a movie where there's four separate Doctor Stranges and the movie is called Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, you can't say that they don't deliver on that promise, right? Like, we really get to see very different iterations of our Steven, and what makes our Steven is his ability to kind of deviate from those other iterations and also learn from their mistakes, which they obviously don't have the opportunity to do. So I think that aspect of the film worked really well for me and kind of makes the multiverse conceit worth it, as well as sort of where we get Wanda at the end, where she kind of gets to, you know, make peace with herself in a certain sense by the end of the film. But what do you think in that regards?
Yeah, I think each of the Stranges we saw, even though some were we saw very briefly, served a really important and different purpose in the story. I liked that this is a little bit related to what we're going to talk about with Wanda, but I like that most of the Stranges in the movie were used to show you that he is not a great guy either, especially in most realities. I mean, the first one you see, he is trying to do something for the greater good, but it involves him basically wanting to kill America Chavez to take her power so something worse doesn't get her power. And you see that our Strange learns, you know, there's a better way. You see one who has basically caused an entire reality to be destroyed, and you see another one who has used the same exact evil magic that Wanda is using. So I like that we see all these versions of him, and we learn, you know, in most realities, he's actually not someone that you necessarily want to trust, even though maybe he wants to try to do the right thing. He does not make the best of decisions. So I thought that was used really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And now I'm kind of saving the Wanda conversation for last because I know it's going to be the one that kind of will require the most time and definitely be the one where opinions are strongest, probably. But so I wanted to touch briefly on one last thing before we get there, which is the Illuminati of it all, right? Mm-hmm. This is kind of everyone, when it came to multiverse stuff, people were saying we're going to get cool, exciting cameos. There was even a lot of reports about when they did reshoots for this last fall, that the part of the reason why we were doing reshoots was to get more cameos in the movie, kind of playing off of some of the other things that had come out previously and where the fan community was at that moment. And so I think expectations were really high for what those cameos might be, how much of the movie they might be in, what role they would play. And then I don't know if you saw this, but it seemed like right about a week or two before the movie came out, Marvel's press people just went full on Illuminati's in this movie, so get ready, which is a choice that I don't really get. But I don't know why you wait so long not to tell people and then tell people right then. But, you know, I guess we'll see how it works at the box office. But so with all of that hype and expectation and anticipation, how do you feel like the Illuminati was used? Are you happy with what happened? Were you surprised by the people included? What was your experience going through that section of the movie?
I loved it most, not necessarily because of even who they were. And I think I knew pretty much all of them except for Black Bolt. That was genuinely the biggest surprise for me, just because I didn't think Kevin Feige would touch anything related to Inhumans with a 10-foot pole, even to kind of even make fun of it or do a different version of it. I just thought that was completely off limits. So that was the biggest surprise to me. All the other ones were basically spoiled in the trailers or things that I had seen people talk. Like, I even saw someone on Twitter be like, man, I hope that picture of Reed Richards isn't real. And I was like, well, I guess now I know it probably is.
Oh,
so,
no.
who they were wasn't really what I was excited about. I was more just excited about the fact that they were in it and the story they're setting up with the incursions, because have you read any of like the Hickman New Avengers stuff where they're involved in?
Yeah.
That's probably in my top, you know, five comic book storylines in the last couple of decades. I just love that whole idea of a secret group of superheroes who essentially think that they're, you know, smarter than everyone else, who are going to govern decisions for the entire planet, if not universe, who secretly get together.
Multiverse.
the multiverse, who in that storyline, similar to this one, they basically gather to, you know, deal with issues where two realities are incurring upon each other, leading to the destruction of one if the alternate Earth is not destroyed. So they basically have to decide to destroy planets in order to save entire realities, which, you know, drives them apart, drives some of them, you know, mad, drives some of them to betray each other. And it's a really cool storyline. They're not doing exactly that here, at least not yet, because they're giving us an alternate version of them. But I could very well see in a couple of movies or a couple of years, Doctor Strange or someone else deciding, you know, we need to form our own version of this group to oversee all the stuff that's going on, because we can't just trust that it's going to take care of itself, and we can't trust, you know, everyone in the public with this knowledge. So my hope is it's kind of setting up, here's sort of a doomed or failed version of this group, and here and then in the main MCU we're going to try to do our own version of that and hopefully succeed where they fail. And in terms of the cameos, again, a lot of this I could save some of this for when we talk to Wanda, but I enjoyed what happened.
I feel similar. I knew, you know, we all knew that Professor X was going to be on the team, right? Because of on the Illuminati team, I should say, because of the Super Bowl trailer. And a lot of other people were rumored. It seemed like I had seen so much about Captain Carter being in this movie that felt like just a sure thing. The Reed Richards stuff, I really wasn't expecting. Just because so many people were like, oh, Reed Richards is going to be in this, Reed Richards is going to be in that, and we haven't gotten any casting news at all, right? A lot of the times with these cameos and things like that with Marvel, people get so far out ahead of themselves because they're like, well, you know, this person would be a good person for the role, and therefore they might be in this. And it's like, typically, it's been very, very rare for us to see an actor in a role who has not been cast yet, right? Where the press always finds out that they've been cast. We don't know that they're going to pop up here necessarily, right? There's been plenty of instances of, you know, like even thinking about Wanda and Pietro, right? We didn't know that we were going to get our first glimpse of them at the end of Captain America, the Winter Soldier, but we knew that they were cast in those roles by the time that end credit came around. I really can't think of a single time outside of the original Sam Jackson, like we didn't know Sam Jackson was cast as Nick Fury until he showed up in Iron Man and the end credit scene, that we're getting to see an actor in a role where we didn't previously know that they were at least cast in that role for a different project. So we didn't know that John Krasinski was cast as Reed Richards. We know that the internet decided he should be, like 2 years ago for some reason, but we didn't know that happened. And given the multiversal nature of this, we still don't know if he's going to be the Reed Richards in our universe. It's unclear. But so when he was there, that was a surprise. You know, when Black Bolt was there and it was Anson Mount, I thought maybe we might get Black Bolt because he's like such a big part of the Illuminati in the comics. But I like you, was skeptical given that it seems like everyone wants to agree that Inhumans never happened, and rightfully so, as someone who saw in the Inhumans. But to see him pop up there is like, oh wow, that's crazy. So that was all of that was a really big surprise for me. And you know, the Latasha Lynch thing, that most people were able to figure that out based on the trailer that was released. So that all, except for the people who thought that was Tom Cruise, and for that I'm very sorry. For you people, I'm not at all upset to not see. I saw something online where there's a conspiracy theory that they actually shot a bunch of Tom Cruise as Ultimate Iron Man, and that it was cut out of the movie as if Tom Cruise would shoot something for a movie and they would cut him out of it. Like, that's never gonna happen.
Right, and like not even use it for a post-credit scene or something. Like, they're not gonna leave that. They're not gonna leave that in the trash. Yeah.
no, but I was, so that was a part of the movie. I was genuinely surprised what ended up happening there. And I thought it was fun. And like you said, we'll get into how they kind of get dispatched, but I really enjoyed that sequence a lot. And I think that some people are upset because it's like, well, Illuminati, they're like the most, they're the smartest people in the world. And they, but the whole point of the Illuminati, and I mean, you know comics better than I do, but isn't it that like they are incredibly arrogant and their plans always blow up in their face?
Yeah, they I forget exactly what happens, but in the New Avengers Secret War storyline, it basically like gets out of control to the point where they have to like, Captain America is a member at one point, and he's like, we can't do this, guys. This is messed up. And they use Doctor Strange to like wipe his memory of even being a member. So they do some pretty like messed up stuff, and then like Captain America.
Well, and they're the ones that like they're the ones that shoot Hulk into space. Yeah. Which they completely goes wrong for them.
They
didn't stop the incursions from destroying the multiverse, as I believe. They failed
that, and they retaliated against the Skrulls after the Kree-Skrull War, which leads to the Skrulls doing secret invasion. So like half of the biggest events in the last 20 years of Marvel Comics is basically like they caused them, but by trying to think that they're better than everyone else. So. Yeah, and also me, this is an alternate version of them.
It is an alternate version, which is fair, but like I feel like if that's their history in the comic books, then of course you should present them as arrogant and ultimately ineffectual because that's like a core part of their brand, right? So in that way, it was a great use of them.
I'm curious what you think about the John Krasinski thing in general. Like, is he someone that you wanted to be Reed Richards, or
really care about Reed Richards as a person in general. Like, I think that there are aspects of him as a character that are interesting and I would like to see get played with in the comic books, right? He's like this important authority figure in the Marvel universe and is important in terms of like an adversary to Doctor Doom and to Kang. And so I get why you would want him there. I have no strong opinions on who should play him in a movie. And I don't really get why everyone has decided that it should be John Krasinski, except for the fact that people want Elizabeth Blunt to be in these movies, which I also would love to see. And people are like, well, she's married to John Krasinski and he was almost Captain America and she was almost the Black Widow. So they should be together as married couple in the MCU. And it's like, I get why that makes sense on an internet message board. I don't know why we need to make that be the reason why we cast them. So I kind of hope that he's not Captain America. I think that he seemed, I mean, not Mr. Fantastic, sorry.
Yeah.
And I think as he's presented here, he's just kind of too nice and likable from what I know of Reed Richards, which is he's like an arrogant son of a bitch, right? Like, and so I feel like he's maybe a bit too nice for the role, but certainly, you know, there's aspects of the things that he's saying and doing that aren't particularly nice, but he has this very affable aspect to him as an actor that I feel like is not consistent with what Reed Richards usually is in the comic books. So I feel like there probably is someone better that we could use. I like the idea of having Reed Richards be an older person, you know, someone who isn't 22 like Miles Teller. but I don't necessarily need it to be him moving forward. I think it's possible that he will end up being it. What do you think about him in the role?
I never really got the fan casting for him. I think a lot of it has to do with what you said about him and Emily Blunt being a married couple and, you know, Mr. Fantastic Woman being married. I didn't think he was great in the movie. It just didn't seem like a very good performance. It was weird characterization, like you said. So if you weren't convinced before, I don't think this is going to convince anyone that it should be him. And I almost feel like I don't think Marvel does a lot of like fulfilling like fan casting wishes. So this would be sort of a first in terms of what I can think of. So I almost feel like they did this to say like, here's what you wanted for the alternate version, but for the real version, we're going to cast someone else, because I feel like you would want to cast as much as possible that whole family like together and kind of see like which actors would play well off each other. And like you said, like it'd be weird if he was already cast for that movie potentially along with like Emily Blunt or other people that we haven't heard about yet. So this almost feels like to me they brought him in for a secret cameo, but not necessarily for an ongoing thing. That's That's kind of where I'm at right now. And I wouldn't be devastated if it was him, depending on how the direction they go with that movie, but I'd be perfectly happy if it was someone else.
Yeah, I mostly agree. I think that there are a few instances where the fan casting kind of ended up coming together, such as, you know, Samuel Jackson as Nick Fury. I think that's a big early example. But that's a little bit more complicated because it's not just that the fans thought that would be cool, but like literally the ultimate version of Nick Fury was modeled after Sam Jackson explicitly. So that's
to the point where he is like, I feel like I should like sue someone for this because they just ripped off my face. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, another instance that I'm thinking of is, I just had it and now I lost it. Our titular character, Doctor Strange, Benedict Cumberbatch was definitely a fan cast. But it's kind of funny with him where it was like, well, he seems the most obvious choice and everybody agreed. And then they spent like a year trying to get anyone else to do it. Right. They were like, maybe Ryan Gosling could do it. And he has a take. They really wanted Joaquin Phoenix for a while. And then he eventually was like, I don't want to be in this machine. I'm not doing it. And then they kind of circled back around to Benedict Cumberbatch, who was the one that the internet said, well, obviously it should be Benedict Cumberbatch from the beginning. So do you think that that was an example of them ultimately landing there, but they sure didn't seem like they wanted to? I think it's paid off because he's good in the role, and especially in the last few times we've seen him. But yeah, outside of those instances, it's not very common when it comes to fan casting. I agree. So one thing I'll say, I really like the suit. I was surprised because I think that the Fantastic Four outfits can look kind of like cheesy, and I wasn't really sure what they would do with it in live action, but I thought it looked great on him.
It didn't jump out to me as like particularly good or bad, but it's everything in that section, like that section especially, I want to watch a couple more times because there's just so much going on in terms of what was happening and also just like all the things they were saying that was having my mind spinning about, you know, future storylines, but you know, probably like not the greatest thing when you're like thinking about what could happen in the future when you're watching a movie, but that section I think is really geared towards getting people thinking about this bigger storyline. So that's what I was thinking about. I definitely need to read it again.
Yeah, I understand that. And I also want to say briefly while we're on this topic that Haley Atwell in this role as Captain Carter was excellent, I expected her to be. I loved seeing her in this capacity. I don't love that it suggests that we have to consider What If officially part of the Marvel universe, but I do think that she's so great and so fun, and you know, I would have liked to see a little bit more of her, but I do like that they gave her Steve's line of I could do this all day, that before they killed her. I thought that was nice.
I think you can consider it as much or as little as you want, because as far as I understand, this is not the same version of Captain Carter that we saw in that show. This is yet a different version, so at least that's how I interpreted it. What about you?
I hope that that's the case. I would like to believe that, because then I can just not think about What If at all.
Yeah, I mean, and from what I got, all the people in the Illuminati were from this specific world, which I think is Earth 8838. So, which is not the case with the Captain Carter we see in What If, as far as I could tell. You know, it seems like she kind of went off and did her own thing with that group of people. So I don't think where she ended up in that show is the same reality that we saw.
Okay. Yeah, I hope that that's the case. I would trust your judgment. I was trying to remember who she ends up with in her universe. I know that like her first episode ends with her being with Nick Fury at the gate. And I couldn't remember if when we see her again, if she's with any characters.
The season ends with her in sort of like the opening scene of Winter Soldier, where she finds like Steve's body in the Iron Man type robot on like the ship that they go to in Winter Soldier. I think that's where it is.
Yeah, so we don't really know if any of these other characters that we've seen in the Illuminati are present in her world or not. We don't really have confirmation either way.
Well, and something interesting about the X-Men or Professor X, someone told me in the credits that the X-Men theme that they play when he comes on screen, which is from the animated series, is credited as X-Men 97 theme, which is the name of the animated series revival that Marvel Studios is doing. So it's weird that that's what they credited it as opposed to just like X-Men the animated series. which has some people speculating, and the showrunner on that show recently of X-Men 97 gave sort of a cryptic answer about whether that show was set in the MCU. So that has some people thinking, could this universe be the same universe as the X-Men, the animated series? I kind of doubt it, but that's one theory that's being floated out there.
Yeah, that seems unlikely, but not impossible.
Yeah.
we'll have to see. I mean, I think that the reason why it would probably be credited as that specific one is because that's the one that they own the rights to completely, you know, because that was probably, like, they commissioned that for the new animated one, and it was commissioned to invoke the classic one but be different, and I'd imagine the rights of that are less complicated than the rights of the original one. So that would be my guess.
Yeah.
But who knows? You never know. Because, you know, Marvel doesn't like to release things that aren't connected anymore. So maybe they are.
And he is in the same yellow wheelchair as that show. So.
I heard, like, when I watched this movie, I heard people literally just, like, gasp at the chair specifically. Like, you could hear people being like, that's the chair. I'm just like, okay, guys, calm down. but now, this is kind of going to be the rest of our episode, I think. We're going to talk about Wanda, because we haven't talked about her yet, because as I said, I wanted to kind of give her justice and get everything else out of the way, because Wanda is a character that is really close to my heart. I really, really like her. From the second that she came on screen, I was excited about the potential of the character. I'm a huge fan of Elizabeth Olsen. When she was going to be in Civil War, people were like, well, who cares about her? And I was like, no, she's a really good character. She's a really good actress. There's a lot of potential there. We're going to see it. And then I feel like finally with WandaVision, everyone else got on board, and we saw what a tremendous performer Elizabeth Olsen is, and the really exciting storytelling opportunities that could come out of a reality warper like Wanda with such a tragic backstory. So I was really, really excited to see her here. I know that many people who are fans of hers, as I am, feel really let down by what happens to her in this movie. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think about the fact that Elizabeth Olsen as Wanda Maximoff, aka the Scarlet Witch, is the antagonist of this movie from minute one to the final closing moments of this movie? She is through and through the bad guy, right? She is added to my list of MCU villains, which I keep very fastidiously. So what do you think about that choice? First, I want you to just tell me what your initial reaction was when you realized that the movie was going to start with her, not a doppelganger of her, not another character from another dimension, but her, our Wanda, as the villain from the jump.
I was surprised, not because I didn't expect it would happen. I sort of had a sense that she would be an antagonist in some form, not necessarily the main antagonist, but I thought it would be sort of a third act either twist that she was hiding all along, or that something would happen to her where she would kind of go in a different direction. I thought the first two thirds of the movie were going to kind of be her, Strange, and America kind of on an adventure together. And they really kind of messed you up with that prominent shot in the trailer where, like, her and Wong are, like, side by side, like, fighting monsters. That's not what that scene really is. So that really threw me off. I wasn't, like, stunned that she was the villain. She has a long history of, like, kind of going back and forth between the good and the bad sides in the comics. So I'm all for that. I was just shocked. I was kind of shocked at, like, literally, like, her third line in the movie is like, oh, yeah, I'm the bad guy. That's not the line, but that's the line that it gets revealed that quickly.
That was shocking to me as well. I had similar expectations. I honestly thought that there was a more than like 20% chance, at least, that the Wanda who seems like she may be villainous in some of the trailer footage was going to be an alternate version Wanda, and that it was going to have to be kind of a situation where our Wanda has to kind of vanquish the alternate version of her. And I was a little bit annoyed by that potential, because I felt like if you're going to tell this story, like, actually tell it with the character that we care about. Don't kind of take the teeth out of it by having it be like an alternate version of her, you know? And so when it got revealed so quickly that that was not the case and that they were really going to go for it and tell this story, I was excited. That was my initial reaction, was just like, oh, wow, they're really going to go there. I'm very curious to see what that will be. And I think that Elizabeth Olsen, especially in that opening act of the movie, sells so much stuff that I think maybe on the page, and certainly in how some people are receiving it, could be really offensive. The sort of like, I just love my children and that's all that I care about, so I'm going to destroy the multiverse, right? But I think that, and that's definitely there, and I get it why people are upset about that. But I think that what Elizabeth Olsen does is that she grounds that with so much pathos and so much humanity. Like, you feel like as she's, as the words are coming out of her mouth in those early confrontations with Strange, she's trying so hard to justify and rationalize these incredibly strong feelings that she has that she can't quite make sense of. And I think that that is really relatable in a lot of ways. You know, the fact that she's starting from this really pure place of just wanting to be reconnected with the family that she's lost, right? The last bit of this family, the one that she's got to spend the least amount of time with, right? She's lost her brother, she's lost her parents, she's lost the love of her life, and she's lost these kids. And these kids are the ones that she's had the least amount of time with. And so she wants these kids back. She wants to have this a chance at this life again. And that's a really pure, honest place. And that pursuit has caused her to go down this path that is so dark because of the you know, in my opinion, which is like the negative emotions that are attached to the despair that she's been feeling for all these years and the tremendous depression and guilt and shame that is that we saw explored in WandaVision so well. What do you think about that dynamic of the early scenes with Wanda, where Elizabeth Olsen is kind of presenting, as I said, this idea of a person who is tortured by what she wants and overcome by the loss of that and is justifying a lot of choices as a result that the character that we knew at the beginning of this run wouldn't have necessarily been making?
Yeah, I had really little to no problems with anything she did in this movie. I thought her performance was amazing. And I think some of the issues for me started to creep in where I guess the whole time I was waiting for that scene, and I thought we were going to get it when Xavier actually sort of goes into her mind and has, and there's the alternate version of her sort of trapped in there. I thought that scene was going to be him talking to the Wanda we know, but a version of her before she was corrupted by the Darkhold. So I thought we would have this sort of, you know, honest conversation between Xavier and our Wanda, and sort of her trying to rationalize a little bit more like the path she went down, some of the mistakes she made, and how she's kind of like just in it now and she can't come back from it. I was waiting for something like that. I was waiting for maybe like a few flashbacks to show us, because this kind of plays into the timeline we were talking about earlier. This takes place, you know, a year to a year and a half after WandaVision, and that show ends with her. You know, we see everything looks all nice outside her cabin, but she isn't really in there reading the Darkhold. So this is a year and a half of her being basically corrupted and absorbed into this, like, book of pure evil and figuring out all the ways that she can use it and it can use her to traverse the multiverse to get her kids back. So like people, I think, have to realize this is not the Wanda necessarily that we knew even in WandaVision, where she made some mistakes, where she kind of took over this town in her grief and did some things that she didn't mean to do necessarily. This is her. And then that added layer of, you know, evil magic on top of it. So I was just waiting for that little bit more of context, and I could, you know, figure it out in my head and have fun with it and enjoy the performance. And like I said, I liked everything that she did. I love that she just kind of dispatched of the Illuminati in some of like the most gruesome scenes in the movie. But I think there was like a few missing pieces where if this movie had been a TV show or had been even, you know, 10 minutes longer, you could have fit in a little bit more to just like kind of ground that a little bit more. Because if you're watching these in order, you're seeing Wanda in that show, and then within 5 minutes of this movie, she's literally like murdering people in Kamar-Taj. And that's such like a big leap from even just like, you know, controlling people's minds to like having like hard bodies around her, that I understand completely why that's hard for some people to swallow. And I think they could have done a little bit more to make that revelation go down a little easier. But otherwise, I like, Wanda has always been like a very conflicted character in the comic book. She's always been someone who they've always tried to keep in the X-Men or the Avengers and like keep her in the light. And she, you know, often through no fault of her own, through lack of support and other people trying to manipulate her and her magic, she often goes down a path where she causes like immense harm, and it's not really something she wants to do as a person. And that's kind of like the tragic thing about a character. And I like that we can have a character like that in the MCU, and everyone doesn't just have to be like these, you know, flawed heroes. I like that the story has gone on long enough where we can have villains who become heroes and heroes who become villains and vice versa and back. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with her right now.
Yeah, I fully agree with what you said, because I feel like I understand why people who care about this character want to be able to root for her. But I also think that the things that she has gone through and the stuff that these films and TV shows have presented to us are someone who has gone through tremendous loss and tremendous pain. And I think that it's understandable that sometimes people who go through those things end up falling into a dark place. And I think when we're talking about our superhero stories as these kind of metaphors for life, right, these kind of legends that we use to kind of parse out our morality and ideas like that, like how we may have used mythology in the past, like it makes sense to see a fallen hero, right? It makes sense to see a person who has just been overwhelmed by that loss to the point that they lose a part of themselves along the way. And I think that what this movie does is it gives her a path of redemption. She's not stopped. She's not defeated. She is shown, she is forced to see how she is acting and to what the difference is between her reality and what she has told herself to be true. And I think that's a moment that I found really emotionally relatable. You know, I'm not like a person who goes around murdering people all the time when I feel sad, but I think from a metaphorical perspective, yeah, but from like a metaphorical perspective, it's like, yeah, you're not always your best self. And sometimes that negativity feels so overwhelming, that grief and that loss feels so overwhelming that you feel like maybe you're capable of doing anything or justifying anything. And I think that oftentimes movies like this and other movies in our culture tell us that, well, if we can harness that for a righteous path, then all of our actions are going to be justified, right? There's like that idea of the anti-hero, of someone who does something that is morally questionable, but for the right reason, and therefore we forgive it. And I think we have a bit too much of that in our society and in our culture. And I think it's kind of more daring and more interesting to say, no, those people who go down that path, those are people doing bad things. And if they are genuinely a good person, they will have to reckon with that at a certain point and redeem themselves. And I think that that is the arc that they give Wanda. And I think that's a great arc for any character. I think oftentimes the villains in the MCU have pretty shallow arcs that are not very interesting. But the characters that come out at the top of all of those like best villains lists always have the best arc in their films and always give the best performances. And as a fan of this character, I was excited to see her get that opportunity more than anything else, you know, to let, you know, when we talk about like Spider-Man Homecoming, is Tony Stark more interesting than Michael Keaton's Vulture? No, absolutely not, right? Vulture is a really interesting character, and he gets an interesting sort of redemption arc in his own way towards the end of that film, right? Where Peter eventually earns his respect by the end of the film, to the point where he makes a choice that may surprise audiences, that suggests that there's more morality to him than maybe otherwise you may have thought, right? There is a multidimensionality to him, and he is giving a great performance, and it's a really fun role, and it's the role that outside of Peter everyone talks about when they talk about that movie. A lot of people like it even better than Tom Holland in that movie, and it's like, I'm glad that someone like Elizabeth Olsen is getting the opportunity to have a role like that. You know, because our heroes can never go too dark, right? They can never, their arcs always have to have a nice kind of, like, it can touch that third rail, but it can't quite hit it, because then it'll lose us as an audience. And I think it's daring to let this character be that, you know, be the, to touch the rail and then try to come out on the other side. Now, if it turns out that she truly is dead at the end of this film, which I don't believe at all, and never once occurred to me that she could be, I would feel slightly differently about that arc, because I don't think that she needs to die and make a sacrifice to that extent in order to redeem herself. I wouldn't appreciate that for as a fan of the character or as someone considering this arc emotionally or intellectually. But I think that her confronting the reality of her actions, her getting kind of a moment of forgiveness from herself, her alternate self, right, and a moment of compassion between the two of them in a way that I think was really moving. And then her ultimately choosing to strip herself of the opportunity to ever do this again, right, which is really reckoning with who she's become, and also trying to keep others from walking down the path that she now is upset to have walked down. I think all of that is great for her, and I really liked all of that. I'm curious what you think. Sorry, I know I went on a little bit.
No, you're good. I agree. If this is the last we see of her, I will be more disappointed. But I mean, they've brought back the Abomination. They've brought back everyone. I can't see them not bringing her back. I think the only reason she would not be back is if Elizabeth Olsen does not want to do this anymore, which from everything she said, it seems like she's content with where things are, but I haven't seen her say, like, this is it for me either. So if she wants to be back, I'm very confident they'll find a way to bring her back. And at the end of the movie, she does destroy the Darkhold, not only in the main MCU, but apparently in every reality. And something that I don't know if we really touched on is the thing that the Illuminati said caused the incursions of realities crashing together, I believe, is that the Strange of their universe was using the Darkhold to kind of dreamwalk into other realities. And doing things like that, spending time in other realities, even in that way when you're not supposed to be there, is what sort of causes these walls between universes to collapse. So I'm sure there are going to be other things that cause that going forward, but she did sort of take off the map like one huge issue, which is this Darkhold, which exists in every universe, which can be used to do all these horrible things. So
yeah,
she did.
And
you
I
know,
will say, not to interrupt, but a point that I wanted to make earlier too, when you were saying about how it was a missed opportunity when we go inside of her head that we don't get a little bit more insight into that sort of situation with the Darkhold. I think for me, what the story was doing was showing us through multiple iterations of Doctor Strange who were corrupted by the Darkhold, right? Because we get one who was killed because of it that we only get a brief glimpse of, but who caused the destruction of a universe that he is not a part of as a result. And then we get a second iteration of Doctor Strange who has been corrupted by the Darkhold and who has destroyed his universe as well. That the fact, like, I feel like that shades in a lot of what's going on for Wanda. And it also, for me, and maybe this is wrong, and I'm open to being told that, but I feel like the fact that our hero is seen twice in separate universes being fully corrupted to the point of mass destruction by this book does kind of take away some of the concern that people have that this is just a story of a hysterical woman, which is a terrible trope that has existed for years, and certainly her presentation in the comics is guilty of that, because I feel like when you're implicating your own main character and that he is really having to learn those lessons through his own character's flaws in other universes to avoid the same fate, I think that kind of undercuts it at least a little bit. Do you think that it does, that complaint?
I do, and I think that was why it was important to also start the movie with the other Doctor Strange, who did not cause a reality collapse, but he was willing to murder America Chavez to take her power, again, because he thought it was the right thing to do, and it would have ultimately, you know, saved reality or whatever.
Yeah,
but,
and that was the justification that Wanda gives in the very beginning, saying, well, this girl shouldn't be trusted with this power anyway. I can use it in a way that will help myself, but will also keep it away from other people. So in fact, I'm doing a good thing, right? That's the justification that she's using. It's the exact same justification that Strange uses, that version of Strange. And it's the same justification that Wong gives to Strange at the end of the movie too. Like, these are all people that we think are good. They're all willing to make that sacrifice of America in the same way that Wanda is. And I think that kind of cuts against it as well a little bit.
Right. Wong tells him to take her power at the end, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, we see Wong, we see other versions of Strange, we see multiple people willing to do the same thing that she was. And I understand why it still is not satisfying to people, because you can say, okay, but our version of Doctor Strange learned those lessons and became a better person and gets to live on, whereas she is sort of trapped and has succumbed to this, which I totally see that. But I think we can only judge what we have right now, but I'm hopeful that this movie and the way it's playing for people will improve when we see where the story is going, because, I mean, Strange does not end this movie in a perfect place either. You know, we see he has some level of corruption to him as well for some of the actions he took. So I don't think it's necessarily like he is all perfect and good now and she is completely evil and gone. I think there's a lot more to the story.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I interrupted you in a different point that you were making, though. So overall, in terms of the Wanda situation and how it wraps up, do you have anything else to add?
No, I think WandaVision is my favorite show they've done, and it ranks higher than a lot of their movies for me. So I almost feel like that show did too good of a job, you know, characterizing or like humanizing this character to people who, I think before that show, most people did not really care too much about Wanda in the MCU just because she hasn't been given that much to do. She had very minor roles in Civil War and Infinity War, and in Age of Ultron. Most of that movie, she was kind of a pawn of Ultron. So that WandaVision really elevated both Wanda and Vision to like the highest tier of MCU characters for me personally. Whereas before, mm-hmm. like I thought like, oh, Wanda, like, okay, I like her in the comic books. Sometimes she's had some, I like Elizabeth Olsen. She's had some cool scenes in the movies, but there's not really like a lot there for me to like grip onto in terms of her storyline. And WandaVision was so amazing at that. I totally understand why people who love that show are kind of devastated by this movie. But I also think, like, if you rewatch that show, it doesn't really end as rosily as I think some people are making it out to be. I think if you rewatched it now and we're kind of thinking of where things are going in this movie, you might be able to connect the dots a little bit more to say, like, okay, this is sort of set up that she's not perfectly, like, over what's happened to her and everything's great now. You know, she ends that show almost in a worse place than where she started, because now she's lost these kids. She's lost even more in that show, and she ends the show, you know, more isolated and ostracized than ever. So it makes sense to me where she ends up in this movie. I just think they could have done a better job of kind of showing that journey a little bit, because there's such a huge chunk of time we're missing for her between that show and where this movie starts, and you can fill in the gaps, but I just think like you're not necessarily thinking about that journey when you're watching these drastic actions she's taking and thinking about when you last saw her. I understand where that disconnect is.
Yeah. And like for me, I just feel like Elizabeth Olsen's performance is doing the work that the script maybe isn't interested in doing. So it helped, and that is what helped me kind of make that bridge. But I totally hear you, and I understand the criticisms. I guess I wanted to briefly, and we're going longer than I expected us to go.
That's fine.
But I wanted to briefly ask, just what are some standout action scenes to you? This is a Marvel movie, right? And I feel like the Doctor Strange movies aren't necessarily known for their action, but more their visual flair. And certainly this had a bit of both. So is any kind of action sequences stand out? Any standout moments that we haven't hit outside of action that you want to talk about?
I've been a little surprised, because I've seen a lot of people say like the first half of this movie doesn't have like a lot of really cool scenes or it doesn't really feel like a Sam Raimi movie till the second half. And I sort of disagree. There's not as much in the front half, but I think a lot of people are overlooking that really cool fight scene where they have Wanda sort of trapped in, yes. I don't know if it's in the mirror dimension, but she's in this like kind of mirror imprisonment thing. And she finds a way to escape through like reflections in water. So they're trying to cover up all these reflections in Kamar Taj. And she's like, her hand or different parts of her are like sneaking out through reflections, and then she finally escapes and she's like all contorted and like crawling. It's like, that's actually one of the creepiest scenes in the movie. And just, that's the kind of inventive fight scenes that I expect and want from a Doctor Strange movie, where it's not just like two people throwing like lights at each other. They're like trying to prevent a witch from like escaping through reflections on the floor. Like, that's cool stuff that you don't see in most MCU. So that was a standout one for me.
Yeah, I fully agree with everything that you just said about that sequence. I think it's really excellent. And I do think that the opening 30 minutes of this movie feels like an hour, and the final 90 minutes feel like 30 minutes. And because of that, when people walk out of it, they say, well, the first half of the movie felt like this and the second half felt like that. But I've seen it twice now, and it truly, like, by the time you get to Carmitage, that's 25 minutes into the movie. Like, there's very little that we've seen. That first opening action sequence with the giant like monster, I think, lacks a lot of the inventiveness that other action sequences has. It does end in a pretty gnarly way that I was surprised by, when they like spike it in the eyeball and it just
that
drops.
Was the first moment where I was like, oh wow, like Jesus, like this is gonna be a little bit different than to.
Yes.
See, like, all the blood on the other end of the eyeball, yeah.
Yeah, and it screams as it dies, too, which I was surprised by. It's rough. But it doesn't have that sort of, like, exciting visual flair that some of the other ones do. And also, it's a little bit more disoriented in terms of geography and what's happening. Part of that is because it's, like, you got a lot of portals opening and closing all the time. But it is a little bit sloppier than some of the other action sequences. But then, like, from that point, you get, like, a very brief kind of, like, here's what's up going on scene. And then you're, like, right there with Wanda. And then you're right there at Carmitage. And boom, now the rest of the movie is hitting. So I think that I agree with you. I think that this idea of like it's one movie for an hour and it's another movie for an hour is just completely wrong. And I think it's reflective of the emotional experience of watching it, but not accurate to what is happening at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. So like I said, like this moves so quickly from the first literal second after the Marvel Studios logo, you're thrown into a chase sequence. And other than like the wedding and, you know, the stuff with the Illuminati and like some crucial conversations people have with each other, you're moving constantly in this movie. And it most Marvel movies, even though there's a lot of action, don't necessarily feel like that. I feel like a lot of other ones have more room where you're kind of like going on like side missions, or like, okay, we have to regroup and go to this place and get this thing, or we have to like meet this person. And I feel like this has that to a certain degree, but you feel like you're constantly just kind of like going, and you're never given to really breathe in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. It has Mad Max Fury Road is a much better film than this, obviously. I'm going to say that. Like, I wanted to be clear when I make this comparison that I 100% believe that Fury Road is a much better movie. But this movie does have a similar structure and dynamic to Fury Road, in the sense of it's like, okay, we're just like going, we're hitting the ground running, and almost all of the things that we're going through in this next 2 hours is going to be through action, through character development, through action. And it's going to feel like a breakneck pace where we never get a chance to catch our breath because we're up against a clock. And I think that this movie pulls that off in a way that I can't think of another Marvel movie that's structured like this, which is really fun. It certainly doesn't hit those beats to the extent that Fury Road does, but Fury Road is one of the best films of the last 20 years, so you know, I think we can forgive it for not being quite as good as that. I appreciate the fact they're going for and like and being at all inspired by it in the first place, you know. Mm-hmm. But any other points that really stand out to you?
I think I touched on it a little bit, but I love the fight scene with the Illuminati. It's not necessarily like a huge action sequence. It's more like a giant, you know, horror movie murder sequence where Wanda walks in and disposes of all of them in like pretty creative ways, where Black Bolt gets his mouth shut. It looks like in The Matrix where Agent Smith covers Neo's mouth. And he tries to scream and blows his brains out. I don't know what she does to Reed, but it, like, unravels him in, like, a weird way. And I think his, like, head explodes. I forget.
And then
she literally, like, okay, I do remember that. And then she just, like, snaps Professor Xavier's neck, which is just crazy to think about.
Yeah.
So that's an area where, like, I feel like some more like toxic sides of the fan base are going to be annoyed and be like, Wanda shouldn't be able to take out all these people. But that's like the kind of stuff where I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And I thought it was like a very good example of the tone that this movie was ultimately going for, which is this kind of like horror comedy vibe that you just don't, that everyone before the movie was like, yeah, it's Sam Raimi, they're gonna try for that, and you're, and I don't know if you felt the same way, but I was just like, we know what a Marvel movie is, and we know that like they're not gonna do that, right? You know, mm-hmm, like, right, they'll pay lip service to it, but it's gonna be a very watered down version of whatever you're thinking. And like, no, it really wasn't a watered down version at all. I mean, is it like the most R-rated Sam Raimi movie that's ever existed? No, I'm not saying that, but it really goes for it in very fun and surprising ways, and that sequence I think is definitely clear.
Yeah, and it's not like I don't enjoy like super scary movies. I wouldn't say it's like a scary movie. Like,
no, but it plays with those horror elements very well. And it becomes like a straight up slasher movie for that sequence where, like, once she dispatches all of the Illuminati, then she's just after them in a way that's genuinely very effective. And I think genuinely there's fear, if not terror, around her character in that moment. And I think it's really, you know, it's really effective. Especially that you're thinking, like, all of this is happening while she is possessing another body on the top of it. Like,
right. That's what I was going to say. Like, you also don't want anything bad to happen to the version of her that she's inhabiting, because, you know, she has a family as well. So you're like, you want them to stop her from going on this killing spree. But at the same time, you're like, you hope they can do it in a way where they don't, like, kill the Wanda that way. So there's some extra tension there as well.
Yeah. I really like that sequence a lot. I also really like the sequence where Doctor Strange is fighting Doctor Strange with the score of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, literally throwing music notes at it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I like genuinely was cackling in the audience because it was just so insane and surreal and just inventive, and just like, you don't expect to be surprised by an action scene in a movie like this anymore, just because it feels like we've seen everything, and if we're going to see something really novel, it's just not going to be in a movie like this, you know? And they threw it at it, and I just was like, I was amazed. It was so fun, and the way that they really committed to using the score while, like, in concert with that, with the musical notes in the fight scenes, and it just was so, and then the harp, but it was just excellent. I loved it. Did you have a similar experience?
Yeah, it was so strange, and no pun intended, and I had forgotten the detail from the first movie where they kind of, like, seed in his love for music, and he's always talking about, like, you know, when they're in surgery, he's like, with the people, like, guessing, like, who's playing, and he's bringing up Beyonce to Wong, and he's talking about, like, that's sort of his, like, thing. In the MCU, they decided to make that weird character detail, not weird, but they decided to make that a character detail of him that he just loves and has, like, a very vast, like, knowledge of music. So that was a cool way to incorporate that detail, and I thought it was, like, a cool way for Sam Raimi to be like, here's a Christmas present, Danny Elfman.
Yes, yeah. I mean, when has Danny Elfman ever gotten to be the weapon in a fight scene before?
Right.
You know, in his long illustrious career, that's something that has not happened and should have a long time ago. But yeah, just a great use of his music and such a fun way to, because it's Doctor Strange fighting Doctor Strange. There's a million different things you could do, and almost all of them I think would have probably felt kind of boring, or at least something we've seen before. And this wasn't that. This was great.
Yeah.
And then it ends with him getting freaking impaled by a gate in his third eye opening. Okay, can you tell me, I don't know a lot about Doctor Strange in the comics. Can you fill me in on what the deal is with this third eye? Like, I feel like the implication is that, like, it is the cost that the Darkhold has had. It's this kind of, like, mystic third eye that might be evil, I guess. But I don't really get the deal. And it seems like the ending of the movie, I'm supposed to really know what's going on, and I don't when it comes to that.
I think it's them trying to incorporate something from the comics in their own MCU way. So in the comic books, I believe the third eye is actually the Eye of Agamotto, which in the MCU is actually the Time Stone, which... Mm-hmm. You know, he wears around his neck, and the time stone's inside of it, which I think he still is wearing in this movie, even though the time stone is not hidden. stuff.
Yeah, at one point he literally opens it up and shows us that it's empty. So I don't know.
I completely missed that.
To unlock the door to the realm where the book is, he thinks that maybe the spell that he uses to open up the eye will open up the door, and so you see him open the eye and the door simultaneously. Okay. But the door, it doesn't work on the door, and it opens up and you see there's just nothing inside anymore.
Right, so in the comic books, that's actually the third eye, so whenever he, like, calls on that, he gets, like, a third eye in his head, and it's not, I don't think it's supposed to be anything, like, malevolent in the comic books, but here I think they're trying to say, like, this is a side effect of using the Darkhold, and maybe the third eye is actually, like, some sort of demon, or, you know, whoever created the Darkhold, or some other aspect of it that's kind of inhabiting or like invaded your body from your overuse of this thing. So I think that's kind of what they're trying to, the twist ending. It's like a very Sam Raimi, like Drag Me to Hell type twist where you think like kind of everything's fine. And then something goes horribly wrong at the last second where he's just walking down the street. He looks all happy. And then he like collapses on the ground with this third eye popping up. So I think that's them trying to say like, this Darkhold is defeated. But he did use it, and there's going to be a price to pay for that, but even though it's gone. So I think that's kind of what they're trying to say.
Yeah, and then it opens back up in the mid-credits scene where he runs into Charlize Theron as Clea, and she's like, we have to solve the crisis of whatever, and she opens up a rift in space-time to go into the dark dimension, and she's like, unless you're afraid, and he goes, I'm not afraid, and his third eye opens for some reason. I don't know what that was supposed to mean. Do you know what that was supposed to mean?
I think that was just supposed to, like, visually, because it was a little weird, because the movie ends with him, like, collapsing in agony, and then the post-credit scene picks up, and he's just, like, kind of fine again. I think that was...
He's wearing a different outfit. So apparently he went inside and like figured it out a little bit. And then this is in my headcanon, it's like that was he tried to go on a nice walk. This happened and he collapsed on the ground. He goes back inside, spends a week trying to deal with it. Finally, he goes back outside to go on that walk again that he wanted to go the first time. And then Clea pops up and it's like, you got to come with me.
It's like, OK, the third eye hasn't shown up for a week. I think I can go back out again. And then pops up again. I think that was mostly meant to show us like this is after the end of the movie that we saw. He still has this whatever this problem is going to be, but he's somehow got it at least in semi-control that he can go out and walk on the street again, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad that I didn't miss anything. It just doesn't really make sense. Okay. Good. 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 Okay.
And hopefully that is a post-credit scene that they will follow up on, because it seems like sort of a big.
Yeah.
Big character introduction. Yeah.
Yeah. She's huge in the comics, right? You want to tell our listeners before we head out what, because this is kind of like the last beat that I wanted to hit, which is like what to expect going forward in the future, and this seems like a big one.
I think in the comic book she's like Dormammu's niece, who if everyone remembers is the, sort of like the Lord of the Dark Dimension from the first movie, who's you know trying to like absorb all the realities into his own. So she is related to him in some way, and like you said, like the rift she opens behind her, you can tell it's the Dark Dimension from the first movie. But she says something about how there, you know, he caused another incursion and she needs to help to fix it. So maybe she will be part of the MCU's version of the Illuminati or some other group that he kind of starts assembling, starting with her. Or maybe she will bring him into another group to start dealing with these incursion issues, because now it seems like they're starting to affect the main MCU reality because of what he did.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. I love that Charlize Theron is now in the MCU. I love that it happened within a month of finding out that Brie Larson was in the Fast and the Furious franchise. In my head, I feel like they both kind of like dared each other to go into the other universe. And then now we're here. I would love to see a conversation between the two of them, like trading notes on what to do and how to deal with it and stuff.
Yeah. They both feel like a little bit out of place in each of those worlds, but I'm sure it'll work out.
Yeah. I think what we've learned is that anybody can kind of get settled into the MCU that they need to be in, because it's in like all of the acting world will eventually be in at least one of these movies.
Yeah, I think the Brie Larson in Fast and Furious is a little more surprising for me, but
Yeah, we'll see. Although she has become a spokesperson for, like, cars, like, primarily. I feel like that's her been her main job for the last 4 years, so.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of experience now. But yeah, so any other final thoughts? Like, what are you thinking about in terms of, like, do you want to see this movie followed up on with Doctor Strange 2? Are you okay with the idea of this kind of being it for Doctor Strange until whatever big moment we are headed towards with the Illuminati and Secret Wars, and where universes are collapsing into each other? Like, where are you thinking in terms of where the MCU is going? Because outside of Loki setting up the multiverse, nothing we've seen so far is really organized around the idea that we're headed for universes smashing into each other and eventually kind of becoming one giant cultural reset, you know, which is what happens kind of in that Hickman run of Secret Wars. So how are you feeling with this storyline? Are you excited for other pieces to get folded in? Do you have a theory on where some of those pieces will be folded in? Where do you want to see Doctor Strange next? I'll give you the final word on all of that stuff.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, like I said, the incursion, like, Secret Wars storyline is one of my favorites from the comics. So I'm thrilled that this is, I sort of, among many people, I sort of predicted that, like, multiverses would be sort of the next big thing after the Infinity Stones. I didn't think they would necessarily go with, like, the incursion storyline, and they're obviously not doing that directly. But I'm really happy that this is where they're going, because I think it opens up so many more possibilities than we had with the Infinity Stones. So it's a great, like, way to escalate what the overarching story is. In terms of where Doctor Strange goes next, I would not, with the amount of money this movie's making, I'm sure there will be a Doctor Strange 3. I think it's just a matter of time, of can they make that before the next huge crossover, which probably will be Secret Wars. If they can, I would like to see Doctor Strange 3 be kind of like a lead into what Secret Wars is. Maybe, like I said, Doctor Strange 3 would be about him sort of overseeing his own version of the Illuminati and trying to get all this stuff under control. And then the movie basically ends with things just like not working out, where, like, okay, there's another reality crashing into ours and there's nothing we can do about it. And that's sort of where Doctor Strange 3 ends. It's almost like the Thanos snap in Infinity War, where it's like, okay, we're at this moment of, like, hopelessness. Everything has gone wrong. And then Secret Wars kind of picks up from there. So I would be thrilled with a Doctor Strange 3 that gets to spend more time setting up what the incursions are and how they try to stop them. And I think Secret Wars will be after all that goes wrong, and it's like all the realities, like, collided together, and, like, bunch of team ups and fights and big action. Whereas I think the Doctor Strange movie could be more used for more of the, like, introspective, like, grappling with what are we going to do if a reality crashes into ours? Would you make that decision to destroy a whole other world just to save yours or to save the multiverse? So I think that's where they could go with him next, especially with where this post credit scene leaves off, with her coming to him to help with an incursion. It seems like that's sort of what they're setting up his next story. That's kind of where I'm thinking right now.
But, like, how do you envision that tying into, like, the Young Avengers subplot that seems to be brewing, or, like, the evil team of bad guys that seems like they've been building with our Contessa character, and, like, some of those other plot strands that we've been seeing so far.
I think we're at the point where there's so many different characters and storylines that it's not all necessarily going to culminate together like it did in the Infinity Saga. So I don't think all of these things are necessarily building to Secret Wars. I don't think all of these storylines are going to have components there. I think some of them are going to wrap up before Secret Wars. I think some might wrap up after. So, like, there might be a Young Avengers movie or show that's, like, my hope for that is, like, The Thunderbolts in the comics, at one point, they sort of replace the Avengers, and it's sort of like in the public, they think they're the good guys, but they're secretly a bunch of villains, like, working to, like, you know, do a bunch of bad stuff. But outwardly facing, people think they're essentially the new Avengers. So I would love a movie where there's the Thunderbolts kind of going around saying, like, hey, we're the new Avengers, we're good guys, we're doing this. And then, like, the scrappy Young Avengers have to kind of get together and, like, reveal them and like no one believes them because they're kids. So it's sort of like a Young Avengers versus Thunderbolts movie. So I think you can do a whole sort of storyline around that that doesn't necessarily have to tie into Secret Wars. But when you do get around to Secret Wars, obviously bring a lot of those characters into that. So I think that's really the only thing they can do right now is sort of tie some of these storylines off at certain points and put them into different lanes, and not necessarily have all of them building to one big thing that's all going to tie together.
That makes sense. Out of everything that you've talked about, everything that we know, everything that we don't know, what's the thing you're most looking forward to next?
In terms of announced things, I mean, I'm really excited for Thor. That's only 2 months away, though. So I think I'm really excited to see what they do with the actual Fantastic Four movie, because I think that could be, if we're dealing with the multiverse saga, I think Fantastic Four is a key component of that. So I wouldn't be surprised if the next major leap in this storyline is in the Fantastic Four movie, especially because I think that's sort of being announced as the end of Phase 4 right now. It wasn't initially, mm-hmm. but if you look at some of, like, the Marvel press releases where every time they do, like, a day where they, like, release a new trailer for a bunch of stuff, they always put, like, an article up on Marvel.com, and they've been like, oh, take a sneak peek at, like, all the upcoming Phase 4 titles, and Fantastic Four has been included in that, and it's always, like, the bottom of the list. So I think right now Fantastic Four is sort of the finale of Phase 4, and I mean, it's kind of cute too, because Phase 4, Fantastic Four. So I think you could kind of like expect the next big escalation of this storyline to be in the Fantastic Four. So I would say that's definitely one of the top things.
That makes sense. That would definitely make sense based on not just what you said, but also in terms of like the production schedules that we know and how far along different projects are. Fantastic mm-hmm. Four definitely seems like it's the last one in all of the things that we've heard confirmed. So yeah, that would be really interesting to end with that instead of an Avengers movie also.
Yeah.
In terms of like what that means moving forward for things. But I guess we'll see. I'm glad that you enjoyed this movie. I'm glad that I enjoyed this movie. I understand why people are not happy with it. I can only speak for myself and say that I'm glad with the movie that I got. And I look forward to seeing Doctor Strange and Wanda Maximoff in the future. So, and America Chavez for that matter, because she's great. I want to see her in like a dozen different things. That actress seems really, really nice. I saw an interview with her on like a press, like on a red carpet. That was very cute. And yeah, I can't wait to see her play with some of the other younger cast members in this franchise as well. So very much excited for that. But in the meantime, Matt, where can we find some of your stuff on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at mthomasfarley. I talk about movies and mostly don't make really dumb jokes. Or you can follow me on Letterboxd at mtf1008. And you can also check out marvelguides.com if you want some MCU timelines and guides, and also primarily comic book reading orders. I'm trying to read pretty much every comic Marvel has ever put out, and that's not something I would recommend because it's like tens of thousands of them. This is not something I'm like doing over the summer. This is like a probably like 10-year long endeavor I'm in the middle of. So you can see the results of that on that website.
I thought I was ambitious when I wanted to watch all of the Star Wars animated shows. Oh man, that's exciting though. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Media Thinkings and on Letterboxd at Media Thinkings. If you enjoyed this conversation, you should definitely check out my podcast over on the Breakcast podcast feed, Bill versus the MCU. I am not Bill, but my co-host is Bill, and the two of us together talk about the entire MCU in chronological order, 3 or 4 movies at a time. We're right in the middle of the run right now, and it's starting to get very interesting because Bill has not seen some of these movies, which is kind of the whole idea. I've seen them too many times, and many of these movies Bill has not seen at all, so we're finally getting into that bit of it. So I'm definitely, if you liked this, listen to that as well. Lots of other plugs that you can find in our show notes, including where you can find Justin and Noah, and where you can find my other podcasts and their podcasts and all the other stuff. So definitely check out the show notes in the description for that. And of course, follow us on Twitter at Cinejoes and subscribe to us on all major podcast platforms. So with no further ado, because this is a very, very long episode for both of us, Matt, thanks again for coming on, and